This kind of reflection often produces at least some look-into kinds of projects that, once identified, will produce a greater sense of being on top of your bigger world. Current problems, issues, and opportunities. A very rich place from which to gather items for your inventory is the broad area of often amorphous things that can disturb your focus if not recognized and dealt with by shaping them into real projects with action steps. These fall into three categories. First, problems. Second, process improvements. And last, creative and capacity building opportunities. When is a problem a project? Always. When you assess something as a problem, instead of as something to simply be accepted as the way things are, you are assuming there is a potential resolution. Whether there is or not might still need to be determined, but at the very least, you have some research to do to find out. Look into improving Frederick's relationship with his school. Resolve situation with landlord and building maintenance. And get closure on compensation dispute with business partner. Are the kinds of very real projects that you might resist defining as such. When you actually do put words to it, put it on your list and create a next action for it, you will surprise yourself with a new level of elegance in the stress-free productivity game. Invariably, there are also projects lurking amid your administrative, maintenance, and workflow processes, in both the professional and personal arenas. What do you find yourself complaining about regarding your systems or simply how things are getting done or not? Is there anything frustrating about your procedures for filing, storage, communication, hiring, tracking, or record keeping? Does anything need improving in terms of your personal or business expense reporting, banking, or investing processes, or how you keep in touch with friends and family? These are also the kinds of projects that usually become projects slyly. It's tricky to notice when they cross the line between mildly irritating and a real bother or inspiration that deserves to get done. Finally, there might very well be things you've been telling yourself you'd like to learn or experience to expand your own development or creative expression. Would you like to learn Italian cooking or how to draw? Have you been telling yourself it would be great to take an online course in digital photography or social media marketing? It's very possible that many of these kinds of might-like-to projects would live just fine on your someday-maybe list. But as you gain greater familiarity with the effectiveness of GTD, you will want to take advantage of the methodology to more readily incorporate new, interesting, and useful experiences into your life by defining desired outcomes about them on the projects list. One list or subdivided. Most people find that one list is the best way to go because it serves as a master inventory rather than as a daily prioritizing guideline. The organizing system merely provides placeholders for all your open loops and options, so your mind can more easily make the necessary intuitive, moment-to-moment strategic decisions. Frankly, it doesn't matter how many different lists of projects you have, so long as you look at the contents of all of them as often as you need to. For the most part, you'll do that in one fell swoop during your weekly review. Some common ways to subsort projects. There are some situations in which it makes good sense and eases some anxieties to subsort a projects list. Let's talk about some usual options. Personal, professional. Many people feel more comfortable seeing their lists divided up between personal and professional projects. If you're among them, be advised that your personal list will need to be reviewed as judiciously as your professional one, and not just saved for weekends. Many actions on personal things will need to be handled on weekdays, exactly like everything else. And often some of the greatest pressures on professionals stem from the personal aspects of their lives that they are letting slip. Delegated projects. If you're a senior manager or executive, you probably have several projects that you are directly responsible for, but have handed off to people who report to you. While you could, of course, put them on your waiting for list, it might make better sense to create a projects delegated list to track them. Your task will be simply to review the list regularly enough to ensure that everything on it is moving along appropriately. specific types of projects. Some people have as part of their work and lifestyle several different projects of the same type, which in some instances it may be valuable to group together as a sub-list of projects. For example, a corporate trainer or a keynote speaker might maintain a separate category of projects presentations, with a chronological listing of all the upcoming events of that nature. These would be projects like the rest, in that they need to be reviewed for actions until they are completed, but it might be helpful to see them all organized on one list, in the order they are coming up on the calendar, apart from the other projects. If you are a real estate agent, sell consulting services, or develop proposals for a relatively small number of prospective clients in any profession, you will likely find it useful to see all of your outstanding sales relationships in progress in one view. This could be a separate list in a planner or digital application, but to be optimally functional, it would need to be complete and each item regularly reviewed for current actions. Some people like to sort their projects by major areas of focus, parents tracking those about their kids, an entrepreneur dividing projects by the various roles he's fulfilling, finance, sales, operations, and the like. Again, how you decide to group your projects is not nearly as critical as ensuring that your inventory is complete, current, and assessed sufficiently to get it off your mind. No matter how you organize it now, you will very likely change your structure as you get more experience using your system and as the nature of your focus shifts in work and life. What about sub-projects? Some of your projects will likely have major sub-projects, each of which could in theory be seen as a whole project. If you're moving into a new residence, for instance, and are upgrading or changing much of what's there, you may have a list of actionable items like finalize the patio, upgrade the kitchen, set up home office space, and so on, all of which could in themselves be considered separate projects. Do you make all of this one entry on your projects list, say, finish new home upgrades? Or do you write up each of the sub-projects as an individual line item? Actually, it won't matter, as long as you review all the components of the project as frequently as you need to in order to stay productive. No external tool or organizing format is going to be perfect for sorting both horizontally across and vertically down through all your projects. You'll still have to be aware of the whole in some cohesive way, such as via your weekly review. If you make the large project your one listing on your projects list, you'll want to keep a list of the sub-projects and/or the project plan itself as project support material to be reviewed when you come to that major item. I would recommend doing it this way if big pieces of the project are dependent on other pieces getting done first. In that scenario, you might have sub-projects with no next actions attached to them because they are, in a sense, waiting for other things to happen before they can move forward. For instance, you might not be able to start on upgrade the kitchen until you have finished assess and upgrade home electrical system. Or you could only afford one of your major home projects at a time, so keeping them lined up in order of your priorities would make sense. However, you might be able to proceed on finalize the patio independent of the other sub-projects. You would therefore want a next action to be continually current on any portion of this larger project that you could make progress on independently. Don't be too concerned about which way is best. If you're not sure, I'd vote for putting your big projects on the projects list and holding the sub-pieces in your project support material, making sure to include them in your weekly review. That often makes it easier to see the larger field of what's going on in your life from a higher perspective at a glance. But if that arrangement doesn't feel quite right, try including the active and independent sub-projects as separate entries on your master list. There's no perfect system for tracking all your projects and sub-projects the same way. You just need to know you have projects, and if they have associated components, where to find the appropriate reminders for them. As I write this, I'm in the throes of moving from California to Europe. For many months, I maintained one project on my projects list, moved to Amsterdam. Last week, as things became more immediate and necessary to deal with on multiple fronts, I unpacked that one project into 15, all of which I need to keep my eyes on weekly now, ranging from set up Dutch bank accounts to finalize artwork storage in Santa Barbara. Project support materials. Project support materials are not project actions, and they're not project reminders. They're resources to support your actions and thinking about your projects. Don't use support material for reminding. Typically, people use stacks of paper, stuffed file folders, and/or a plethora of emails and digital documents as reminders that, one, they've got a project, and two, they've got to do something about it. They're essentially making support materials serve as action reminders. The problem is that next actions and waiting for items on these projects have usually not been determined and are psychologically still embedded in the stacks and the files and emails, giving them the aura of just more stuff that repels its unorganizer instead of attracting him or her to action. It delivers an incessant subliminal chant. Do something about me. Decide something about me. Follow up with something about me. When you're on the run, in the heat of the activities of the day, files like that are the last thing you'll want to pick up and peruse for action. You'll actually go numb to the files and the piles because they don't prompt you to do anything, and they simply create more mental noise and emotional anxiety. If you're in this kind of situation, you must first add the project itself to your projects list as a reminder that there's an outcome to be achieved. Then the action steps and waiting for items must be put onto their appropriate action reminder lists. Finally, when it's time to actually do an action, like making a call to someone about the project, you can pull out all the materials you think you might need to have as support during the conversation. To reiterate, you don't want to use support materials as your primary reminders of what to do. That should be relegated to your action lists. If, however, the materials contain project plans and overviews in addition to ad hoc archival and reference information, you may want to keep them a little more visibly accessible than you do the pure reference materials in your filing cabinet or on your computer. These are fine to store support stuff, too, as long as you have the discipline to pull out the file drawer or open the computer to the proper directory and files and take a look at the plans every time you do your weekly review. If not, you're better off storing those kinds of project support files, perhaps with printouts from computer files, in a standing file holder or a separate pending stack tray on your desk or other visually available surface. To return to the previous example of moving into a new residence, you could have a folder labeled Upgrades, 37 Pinkerton Place, containing all the plans and details and notes about the patio and kitchen and office area. In your weekly review, when you came to Upgrade New Residence on your projects list, you'd pull out the file for that project and thumb through all your notes to ensure that you weren't missing any possible next actions. Those actions would then get done, delegated, or deferred to your action lists, and the folder would be refiled until you needed it again for doing the actions or for your next weekly review. Many people who interact with current and prospective clients have attempted to use client folders and/or client relationship management CRM software to manage the account. The problem here is that some material is just facts or historical data that needs to be stored as background for when you might be able to use it, and some of what must be tracked are the actions required to move the relationships forward. The latter can be more effectively organized within your action lists system. Client information is just that, and it can be folded into a general reference file on the client or stored within a client's focused library. But if I need to call a client, I don't want that reminder embedded anywhere but on a calls list. Software technology will continue to advance the automation of workflow with CRMs and other applications programmed to trigger action reminders, etc. In theory, this would reduce the need for individual tracking of such items. In practice, each person still must engage with the work he or she is accountable for, generated by the software, and managing that within his or her holistic system. Additionally, the variables in our engagements and their activities are often so subtle and fast-changing, even the most sophisticated technology will fall short of being totally trusted for such detailed direction in the foreseeable future. Organizing ad hoc project thinking. In Chapter 3, I suggested that you will often have ideas that you'll want to keep about projects, but that are not necessarily next actions. Those ideas fall into the broad category of project support materials, and may be anything from a notion about something you might want to do on your next vacation to a clarification of some major components in a project plan. These thoughts could come as you're driving down the freeway listening to a news story on the radio or reading a relevant article. What do you do with that kind of material? My recommendation here is that you consider where you're keeping tabs on the project or topic itself, how you might add information to it in that format, and where you might store any more extensive data associated with it. Most professionals will have several options for how to handle support materials, including attaching notes to a list item, organizing digital information in email and/or databases, and maintaining paper-based files and notes in notebooks. Attached notes. Most organizing software allows you to attach a digital note to a list or calendar entry. If you're keeping a projects list within the software, you can go to the project you had a thought about, open or attach a note to it, and type in your idea. This is an excellent way to capture back-of-the-envelope project thinking. If your projects list is paper-based, you can attach a post-it note next to the item on your master list, or, if you're a low-tech type, on the item's separate sheet. In any case, you'll need to remember to look at the attachment when you review your project to make use of the data. Email and software applications. The digital world offers an infinite variety of ways to deal with project thoughts. Emails that might contain good information related to your projects can be held in a dedicated email reference folder, labeled accordingly. If you have a large volume of emails related to one project, consider creating two folders, Johnson Partnership Active and Johnson Partnership Archive, or some such. You may also find it worthwhile, if you don't have one already, to set up a more rigorous kind of digital database for organizing your thinking on a project or topic. An enormous flowering of such tools has happened in this century, from simple and elegant cloud-based note-taking and notebook organizing software that permits infinite customization for how it's used, to group-sharing file and project management systems, to personal project organizing applications for everything from freeform mind mapping to organizing large writing and research endeavors. The bad news about the good news of the huge assortment of options for digital project support is the ease with which we are seduced into spreading potentially meaningful information into such a multiplicity of locations and mechanisms that it can take us almost back to square one. We don't know where it all is, can't see it all integrated for appropriate overviewing from the right perspective at the right time, aren't sure exactly how to put what data where, so we wind up trying to keep it all coordinated back in our heads. I continually find interesting new ways to track relevant information for various things I'm doing, but I retain sanity only when I keep a clearly delineated and accessible projects list and ensure that I'm scanning across any related parts of my system regularly for pertinent details. Paper-based files. Having a separate file folder devoted to each project makes a lot of sense when you're accumulating paper-based materials. It may be low-tech, but it's an elegant solution nonetheless. Simplicity and ease of handling make for a good general reference filing system, one that lets you feel comfortable about creating a folder for scraps of paper from a meeting. At times, it's easier to overview and access project-related information for planning sessions and conversations using a physical folder than trying to use the digital pieces themselves in the moment. I will often print all potentially useful items pertaining to the project, spreadsheets, schedules, emails, web pages, etc., to have in hand as reference for those kinds of interactions. Pages in notebooks. A great advantage of paper-based loose-leaf notebooks is that you can dedicate a whole page or group of pages to an individual project. For years, I maintained a mid-sized notebook with a projects list in front and a project support section toward the back, where I always had some blank pages to capture any random thinking or plans and details about projects on my list. Though paper-based personal system components are increasingly giving way to their digital counterparts, the notebook model is a valuable one, supporting a more integrated and multi-level platform for well-oriented thinking. Each of the methods previously described can be effective in organizing project thoughts. The key is that you must consistently look for any action steps inherent in your project notes and review the notes themselves as often as you think it is necessary, given the nature of the project. You'll also want to clear out many of your notes once they become inactive, unreal, or redundant to keep the whole system from catching the stale virus. I found a lot of value in capturing these types of thoughts, more for the way it consistently helps my thinking process than because I end up using every idea. Most I don't. But I try to make sure not to let my old thoughts stay around too long, pretending they're useful when they're not. Organizing non-actionable data. Interestingly, one of the biggest problems with most people's personal management systems is that they blend a few actionable things with a large amount of data and material that has value but no action attached. Having good, consistent structures with which to manage the non-actionable items in our work and lives is as important as managing our action and project reminders. When the non-actionable items aren't properly managed, they clog up the whole process. Non-actionable items fall into three large categories: reference materials, reminders of things that need no action now but might at a later date, and things that you don't need at all. Trash. Reference materials. Much of what comes across your desk and into your life in general is reference material. There's no action required, but it's information that you want to keep for a variety of reasons. Your major decisions will be how much to keep, how much room to dedicate to it, what form it should be stored in, and where. Much of that will be a personal or organizational judgment call based upon legal or logistical concerns or personal preferences. The only time you should have attention on your reference material is when you need to change your system in some way because you have too much or too little information given your needs or preferences. The problem most people have psychologically with all their stuff is that it's still stuff. That is, they haven't decided what's actionable and what's not. Once you've made a clean distinction about which is which, what's left as reference should have no pull or incompletion associated with it. It's just your library. Your only decision, then, is how big a library you want. When you've fully implemented this action management methodology, you can be as big a pack rat as your space, physical and digital, will allow. As I've increased the size of the hard disk on my computer and added an almost infinite backup capability on attached drives and in the cloud, I've kept that much more email in my archives and that many more digital photographs. The more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned, since increasing the volume of pure reference material adds no psychological weight. The variety of reference systems. Reference material now shows up in many forms, topics and media, with numerous ways to organize it. What follows is a brief discussion of some of the most common. General reference filing, paper, email, and simple digital storage. Large category filing. Contact managers, and libraries and archives. General reference filing. As I've emphasized in previous chapters, a good filing system is critical for processing and organizing your stuff. It's also a must for dealing with the paper-based material and ad hoc digital information that are valuable to you for one reason or another, and you'll need a way to store both. Ideally, you already set up a general reference filing system as you were processing in. You need to feel comfortable storing even a single piece of paper that you might want to refer to later, or an article you read online, and your general reference system must be informal and accessible enough that it's a snap to file something away, right at hand, where you do your work and personal administration and review. If you're not set up that way yet, listen back to Chapter 4 for help on this topic. Most people wind up needing from 1 to 4 physical file drawers, many dozens of email reference folders, and other digital storage locations and categories that can range from a few to hundreds. As a bit of a foodie, I have kept track of any restaurant around the world I might want to patronize from experience or referrals. It's in a software application that allows me to look under, for example, locales, London, restaurants, and see my list. Just that one topic, restaurants I might want to visit, populates hundreds of folders and subfolders on my computer. The web itself is nothing more than a huge digital filing cabinet, which both relieves the need to create your own digital reference library and produces a huge amount of the type of information you will likely want to collect and organize within your own system. The ever-increasing plethora of information and ways to access and organize it only forces the necessity to distinguish non-actionable from actionable inputs and to create and maintain an easily usable system of reference data storage. Large category filing. Any topic that requires more than 50 folders and/or major documents should probably be given its own section, drawer, or digital database with its own alpha-sorted or other easily searchable system. For instance, if you're managing a corporate merger and need to keep hold of a lot of the paperwork, you may want to dedicate 2 or 3 whole file cabinets to hold all the documentation required in the due diligence process. If gardening or sailing or cooking is your passion, you may need at least a whole file drawer for each of those designated hobbies. Bear in mind that if your area of focus has support material that could blend into other areas of focus, you may run into the dilemma of whether to store the information in general reference or in the specialized reference files. When you read a great article about wood fencing and want to keep it, does that go in your garden cabinet or in the general system with other information about home-related projects? As a rule, it's best to stick with one general reference system, except for a very limited number of discrete topics. Contact managers. Much of the information that you need to keep is directly related to people in your network. You need to track contact information of all sorts: mobile, home, and office phone numbers, email addresses, and so on. In addition, if you find it useful, you may want to maintain information about their birthdays, names of family members, hobbies, interests, etc. In a more rigorous professional vein, you may need or want to track hire dates, performance review dates, goals and objectives, and other potentially relevant data for staff development and legal purposes. The contacts section of most of the digital and paper organizers, along with the calendar, has probably been the most commonly used component. Everyone needs to keep track of phone numbers and email addresses. It's instructive to note that this is purely and simply reference material. No action is required. This is just information that you might need to access in the future. As digital as the world seems to have become, many people still have stacks of collected business cards that are subtly yelling at them: decide something about me, do something with me. But once you have filtered actionable items out of those inputs, there's no big mystery about how to organize contact information, aside from the logistics for your individual needs. Again, the only problem comes up when people try to make their contact manager serve as a tool for reminding them about things they need to do. That doesn't work unless it's part of a well-functioning CRM system that includes both customer information and action triggers appropriately assigned and incorporated. As long as all the actions relative to people you know have been identified and tracked in your action reminder lists, there's no role for a contact manager to fill other than being a data store. The only issue or opportunity then becomes how much information you need to keep and where, and in what equipment you need to keep it in order to have it accessible when you want it. Nothing's perfect in that regard. But as the mobile digital internet-connected tools increase in power, along with their connection to various data stores, both the ease of access and the confusion of options will increase in this regard. Libraries and archives, personalized levels. Information that might be useful lives at many levels. You could probably find out pretty much anything if you were willing to dig deep enough. The question of how much to keep, how close, and in what form will be a changing reality, given the variables of your needs, your particular comfort levels with data, and the technology that turbocharges your relationship to global information. Relative to your personal organization and productivity, this is not a core issue, so long as all your projects and actions are in a control system that you work with regularly. Reference material in all its forms then becomes nothing more or less than material to capture and create access to according to your particular proclivities, requirements, and capabilities. Some degree of consistency will always make things easier. What kinds of things do you need with you all the time? Those must go into your ubiquitously available mobile device or notebook. What do you need for meetings or off-site events? That should be put into your briefcase, pack, satchel, or purse. What might you need when you're working in your office? That should be put into your personal filing system or your networked computer. What about rare situations relative to your job? Material needed for those could be archived in departmental files, off-site storage, or deep in the digital cloud. What could you find on the web anytime you might need it? You don't need to do anything with that information unless you require it when you're away from a good internet connection, in which case you should print the data out when you're online and store it in a file you can take with you. Do you see how that personal organization of reference material is simply a logistical and purpose-based one? Distinguishing actionable from non-actionable things is the first key success factor in this arena. Second is determining what your potential use of the information is, and therefore where and how it should be stored. Once these are addressed, you have total freedom to manage and organize as much or as little reference material as you want. There is no perfect reference system. Its structures and content demand a highly individual decision that ought to be based on the ratio of the value received to the time and effort required for capturing and maintaining it. You're better off starting with real information you want to keep, deciding the best place to put it so it's retrievable, and crafting that from the ground up than trying to choose or design a system theoretically. You will definitely hone your reference libraries into a larger, more sensible framework as time goes on, but that will best be built from upgrading how you're managing your day-to-day realities. Tolerate some ambiguity here in terms of figuring out the best way to do it all. The key will be some regular overviewing and reassessment of your system and dynamically course-correcting as needed. Someday maybes. The second thing to deal with in organizing non-actionable items is how to track things that you want to reassess in the future. These could range from a special trip you might want to take one day, to books you might want to read, to projects you might want to tackle in the next fiscal year, to skills and talents you might want to develop. For a full implementation of this model, you'll need some sort of back burner or on-hold component. There are several ways to stage things for later review, all of which will work to get them off your current radar and your mind. You can put the items on various versions of someday maybe lists, or trigger them on your calendar or in a digital or paper-based tickler system. Someday maybe list. It's highly likely, if you did a complete mind sweep when you were collecting things from your mental space, you came up with some things you're not sure you want to commit to. Learn Spanish. Get Marcy a horse. Climb Mount Washington. Write a mystery novel. And get a vacation cottage. Are typical projects that fall into this category. If you haven't already done it, I recommend that you create a someday maybe list in whatever organizing system you've chosen. Then give yourself permission to populate that list with all the items of that type that have occurred to you so far. You'll probably discover that simply having the list and starting to fill it out will cause you to come up with all kinds of creative ideas. You may also be surprised to find that some of the things you write on the list will actually come to pass, almost without your making any conscious effort to make them happen. If you acknowledge the power of the imagination to foster changes in perception and performance, it's easy to see how having a someday maybe list out in front of your conscious mind could potentially add many wonderful adventures to your life and work. We're likely to seize opportunities when they arise, if we've already identified and captured them as a possibility. That has certainly been my own experience. Learning to play the flute and how to sail in the open ocean started in this category for me. In addition to your in-tray, there are two rich sources to tap for your someday maybe list, your creative imagination and your list of current projects. Make an inventory of your creative imaginings. What are the things you really might want to do someday if you have the time, money, and inclination? Write them on your someday maybe list. Typical categories include things to get or build for your home, hobbies to take up, skills to learn, creative expressions to explore, clothes and accessories to buy, toys, high-tech and otherwise, to acquire, trips to take, organizations to join, service projects to contribute to, things to see and do. Reassess your current projects. Now is a good time to review your projects list from a more elevated perspective, that is, the standpoint of your job, goals, and personal commitments, and consider whether you might transfer some of your current commitments to Someday Maybe. If, on reflection, you realize that an optional project doesn't have a chance of getting your attention for the next few months or more, move it to this list. People have, at times, found it useful even to subcategorize their Someday Maybe projects. There might be a significant difference for you to think about projects you really want to do around your home as soon as you have the resources versus your bucket list kind of fantasies, such as climbing a mountain in Nepal or creating a foundation for disadvantaged kids. In a company, this might be a distinction between parking lot ideas, let's save that to discuss at our next quarterly meeting, and keeping track of the projects you might energize when and if significant capital shows up. The key here is to pay attention, as you experiment with these options, to whether your lists and subcategories are unnerving or energizing you. Special categories of Someday Maybe. More than likely, you have some special interests that involve lots of possible things to do. It can be fun to collect these on lists. For instance, food, recipes, menus, restaurants, wines, children, things to do with them, books to read, music to download, movies to see, gift ideas, websites to explore, weekend trips to take, ideas miscellaneous, meaning you don't know where else to put them. These kinds of lists can be a cross between reference and Someday Maybe. Reference because you can just collect and add to lists of good wines or restaurants or books to consult as you like. Someday Maybe because you might want to review the listed items on a regular basis to remind yourself to try one or more of them at some point. In any case, this is another great reason to have an organizing system that makes it easy to capture things that may add value and variety and interest to your life without clogging your mind and workspace with undecided, unfinished business. The danger of hold and review files and piles. Many people have created some sort of hold and review pile or file or hold drawer or email folder that vaguely fits within the category of Someday Maybe. They tell themselves, when I have time, I may like to get to this, and a hold and review file seems a convenient place to put it. I personally don't recommend this particular kind of subsystem because in virtually every case I have come across, the person held but didn't review, and there was numbness and resistance about the stack and contents. The value of Someday Maybe disappears if you don't put your conscious awareness back onto it with some consistency. Also, there's a big difference between something that's managed well, as a Someday Maybe list, and something that's just a catch-all bucket for stuff. Usually, much of that stuff needs to be tossed. Some of it needs to go into read review. Some needs to be filed as reference. Some belongs on the calendar or in a tickler file for review in a month or perhaps at the beginning of the next quarter. And some items actually have next actions on them. Many times, after appropriately processing someone's hold and review drawer or file, I've discovered there was nothing left in it. Using the calendar for future options. Your calendar can be a very handy place to park reminders of things you might want to consider doing in the future. Most of the people I've coached were not nearly as comfortable with their calendars as they could have been. Otherwise, they probably would have found many more things to put in there. One of the three uses of a calendar is for day-specific information. This category can include a number of things, but one of the most creative ways to utilize the calendar function is to enter things that you want to take off your mind and reassess at some later date. Here are a few of the myriad things you should consider inserting. Triggers for activating projects, events you might want to participate in, and decision catalysts. Triggers for activating projects. If you have a project that you don't really need to think about now, but that deserves a flag at some point in the future, you can pick an appropriate date and put a reminder about the project in your calendar for that day. It should go in some day-specific versus time-specific calendar slot for the things you want to be reminded of on that day. Then when the day arrives, you see the reminder and insert the item as an active project on your project's list. Typical candidates for this treatment are special events with a certain lead time for handling, product launches, fundraisers, etc. Regular events that you need to prepare for, such as budget reviews, annual conferences, planning events, or meetings. For example, when should you add next year's annual sales conference or get kids set up for the next school year to your projects list? Key dates for significant people that you might want to do something about: birthdays, anniversaries, holiday gift giving, etc. Events you might want to participate in. You probably get notices constantly about seminars, conferences, speeches, and social and cultural events that you may want to decide about attending as the time gets closer. So figure out when that closer time is and put a trigger in your calendar on the appropriate date. For example, Chamber of Commerce breakfast tomorrow, Lions football tickets go on sale today, BBC special on climate change at 8 p.m., Garden Club tea next Saturday. If you can think of any jogs like these that you'd like to put into your system, do it now. Decision catalysts. Once in a while, there may be a significant decision that you need to make but can't or don't want to right away. That's fine in terms of your own self-management process, as long as you've concluded that the additional information you need has to come from an internal rather than an external source. For example, you need to sleep on it. Or there is a good reason to delay your decision until a last responsible moment, allowing all factors to be as current as possible before you choose how to move on it. But in order to move to a level of okayness about not deciding, you'd better put out a safety net that you can trust to get you to focus on the issue appropriately in the future. A calendar reminder can serve that purpose. If you are using a group-accessible calendar, you obviously must maintain discretion about those kinds of triggers. Digital calendars usually have private categorization functions you can use for entries you don't necessarily want everyone to see. Some typical decision areas in this category include hire or fire, merge, acquire, sell, divest, change job or career, potential strategy redirection. This is a big topic to devote so little time to, I know, but go ahead and ask yourself, is there any major decision for which I should create a future trigger so I can feel comfortable just hanging out with it for now? If there is, put some reminder in your calendar to revisit the issue. The tickler file. One elegant way to manage non-actionable items that may need an action in the future is the tickler file, also referred to as suspense, bring forward, perpetual, or follow-up file. A three-dimensional version of a calendar, the original version of this allows you to hold physical reminders of things that you want to see or remember, not now, but in the future. It can be an extremely functional tool, allowing you to, in effect, set up your own postal service and mail things to yourself for receipt on a designated future date. I have used a tickler file for years. Even though technology has made reminders of this sort more easily digitized in software and mobile access devices, it's possible that numerous things for you are more easily managed in this low-tech manner. The promise of digital management of such things is marching forward incessantly, but there remain many things in my personal system that are more efficiently managed by physical particles as reminders. Essentially, the tickler file is a simple file folder system that allows you to distribute paper and other physical reminders in such a way that whatever you want to see on a particular date in the future automatically shows up that day in your entry. If you have a secretary or assistant, you can entrust at least a part of this task to him or her, assuming that he or she has some working version of this or a similar system. typical examples would be, hand me this agenda the morning of the day I have the meeting. Give this back to me on Monday to rethink, since it applies to our board meeting on Wednesday. Remind me about the Hong Kong trip 2 weeks ahead, and we'll plan the logistics. Then, every day of the week, that day's folder is pulled and reviewed. Even if you are in a high-level professional role, while you can, and probably should, utilize staff to handle as much of this as is appropriate, I recommend that, if you can integrate it into your lifestyle, you maintain your own tickler file functionality. There are many useful things you can do, at least some of which you may want to avail yourself of outside the pale of your assistant's responsibilities. I use my tickler file to manage travel documents I need at hand on a certain day, reminders of birthdays and special events upcoming that would take up too much visual room on my digital calendar, printouts of interesting things to explore when I might have more time in a couple of months, etc. Bottom line, the tickler file demands only a 1 second per day new behavior to make it work, and it has a payoff value exponentially greater than the personal investment. It represents a unique executive function, deciding not to decide until a certain point. Setting up a tickler file. If you are doing this in a physical system, you need 43 folders, 31 labeled 1 through 31, and 12 more labeled with the names of the months of the year. The daily files are kept in front, beginning with the file for tomorrow's date. If today is October 5th, then the first file would be 6. The succeeding daily files represent the days of the rest of the month, 6 through 31. Behind the 31 file is the monthly file for the next month, November, and behind that are the daily files 1 through 5. Following that are the rest of the monthly files, December through October. The next daily file is emptied into your in tray every day, and then the folder is refiled at the back of the dailies, at which point, instead of October 6, it represents November 6. In the same way, when the next monthly file reaches the front, it's emptied into the in tray and refiled at the back of the monthlies to represent November a year from now. On October 31st, after you empty the daily file, the November file will be the next one, with the daily files 1 through 31 behind it. This is a perpetual file, meaning that at any given time, it contains files for the next 31 days and the next 12 months. The big advantage of using file folders for your tickler system is that they allow you to store actual documents, the form that needs to be filled out on a certain day, the meeting agenda that needs to be reviewed then, the invoice that you're holding payment on until that day, etc. In order for the system to work, you must check and update it every day. If you forget to empty the daily file, you won't trust the system to handle important data, and you'll have to manage those things some other way. If you leave town or don't access the file on the weekend, you must be sure to check the folders for the days you'll be away before you go. Checklists, creative and constructive reminders. The last topic in personal system organization that deserves some attention is the care and feeding of checklists, those recipes of potential ingredients for projects, work processes and procedures, events, and areas of value, interest, and responsibility. In essence, any of the lists or categories of reminders we've already discussed are checklists in that they serve the function of providing things to check or review to ensure that you're not missing something in that area. The more common idea of checklists, however, refers to a listing of the contents of a topic, procedure, or some arena of interest or activity to be utilized either at a specific time or whenever you engage in a particular kind of activity. These can range from big picture outlines of areas of focus in your job or your life, down to the detailed instructions of how to load pictures onto a website. Many years ago, Alfred North Whitehead cogently observed, "Civilization advances by extending the number of important operations which we can perform without thinking about them." Checklists provide the micro version of that macro observation. Whenever you have to think about anything, either because of some regularity of a refreshed view, at the end of every calendar year, I want or need to, or a specific situation that requires more detail than you can easily recall, before I deliver a seminar, I need to... You should entrust those jobs to your external mind, your management system that holds the details you need to engage with at appropriate times. A powerful exposition of this function and its value, and the cost of not paying attention to it, was laid out in Atul Gawande's book, The Checklist Manifesto, How to Get Things Right, Metropolitan Books, 2009. There is an infinite number of possible checklists that allow you to have more relaxed control in various situations across your life and work. If you ever refer to a recipe in a cookbook in order to prepare a specific dish, you're using a checklist to boost your focus and productivity. If your board has tasked you with three key initiatives or outcomes for the year, reviewing those prior to your board meeting would be utilizing a checklist. Because I am describing the process of clarifying and organizing what may be on your mind, to begin to implement this system, I'll focus on a common set of topics that emerge for people for which checklists are often the best solution. Things you want to pay attention to. Often, when we are working with people to clear up what is on their minds, what shows up are things like this. Exercise more regularly. Spend more quality time with my kids. Do more proactive planning for my division. Maintain good morale on my team. Ensure we're in alignment with corporate strategy. Keep the client billing process up to date. Focus more on my spiritual practices. Pay more attention to the individual goals of my staff members. Keep myself motivated in my job. Keep current conversations and updates going with key people in my company. What should you do with these fuzzier kinds of internal commitments and areas of attention? First, identify inherent projects and action. For much of this kind of stuff, there is still a project and/or an action that needs to be defined. Exercise more regularly really translates for many people into set up regular exercise program, a project, and call Sally for suggestion about gyms and personal trainers, a real next action step. In such cases, inherent projects and actions still need to be clarified and organized into a personal system. Or, maintain good morale on my team should become a project. Explore team-building processes for my department. With a specific action step, email our HR director to get her input on this opportunity. But there are some things that don't quite fit into that category, and often appropriate checklists are needed to address them. Blueprinting key areas of work and accountability. Objectives like maintain good physical conditioning or keep my team motivated may still need to be built into some sort of overview checklist that will be reviewed regularly. You have multiple layers of outcomes and standards playing on your psyche and your choices at any point in time, and knowing what those are at all the different levels is always a good idea. And yet not so easy to habitually maintain and adhere to. I suggested earlier that there are at least 6 levels of your work that could be defined and that each level deserves its own acknowledgement and evaluation. A complete inventory of everything you hold important and are committed to on each of these levels would represent an awesome checklist. It might include career goals, service, family, relationships, community, health and energy, financial resources, creative expression. And then moving down a level, within your job, you might want some reminders of your key areas of responsibility, your staff, your values, and so on. A list of these might contain points like team morale, processes, timelines, staff issues, workload, communications, technology. All of these items could in turn be included on the lists in your personal system as reminders to you as needed to keep the ship on course on an even keel. Many times the value is simply to affirm that the specific area is okay as is. Nothing needs to be added or changed. But knowing that adds to your relaxed focus. The more novel the situation, the more control required. The degree to which any of us needs to maintain checklists and external controls is directly related to our unfamiliarity with the area of responsibility. If you've been doing what you're doing for a long time, and there's no pressure on you to change in that area, you probably need minimal external personal organization to stay on cruise control. You know when things must happen and how to make them happen, and your system is fine, status quo. You could manage those in your sleep. Often, though, that's not the case. Did you ever have to go through some prescribed procedure to manage a discrete kind of financial transaction, log in and refresh a software application, or even go through several necessary steps to check in to a friend's vacation cabin, and you had the experience of asking yourself, wait a minute, what do I need to do now? In any of those situations, you may want or need to repeat, you need a checklist. I am dangerously semi-literate in terms of computers and software, and whenever I get instruction from our IT experts about how to fix some recurring glitch, it is easy to convince myself I will remember what they told me. I have learned too many times the hard way to create checklists for them. Many times you'll want some sort of checklist to help you maintain a focus until you're more familiar with what you're doing. If your CEO suddenly disappeared, for example, and you instantly had to fill her shoes, you'd need some overview and outlines in front of you for a while to ensure that you had all the mission-critical aspects of the job handled. And if you've just been hired into a new position with new responsibilities that are relatively unfamiliar to you, you'll want a framework of control and structure, if only for the first few months. As we have instituted a novel organizational structure and operating system in our company, we have been using many critical checklists to support our meeting practices for its implementation until they become automatic. There have been times when I needed to make a list of areas that I had to handle temporarily until things were under control. For instance, when my wife and I decided to create a brand new structure for a business we'd been involved with for many years, I took on areas of responsibility I'd never had to deal with before, namely accounting, computers, marketing, legal, and administration. For several months, I needed to keep a checklist of those responsibilities in front of me to ensure that I filled in the blanks everywhere and managed the transition as well as I could. After the business got onto cruise control, to some degree, I no longer needed that list. Checklists at all levels. Be open to creating any kind of checklist as the urge strikes you. The possibilities are endless, from core life values, to things to take camping, to potential holiday gifts. Making lists ad hoc as they occur to you is one of the most powerful yet subtlest and simplest procedures that you can install in your life. To spark your creative thinking, here's a list of some of the topics of checklists I've seen and used over the years. Job areas of responsibility, the key responsibility areas. Exercise regimens, muscle resistance training programs. Travel checklist, everything to take on or do before a trip. Weekly review, everything to review and or update on a weekly basis. Training program components, all the things to handle when putting on an event front to back. Key clients. People to stay in touch with, all the people you might want to connect with in your network. Year-end activities, all the actions for closing up for the time period. Personal development, things to evaluate regularly to ensure personal balance and progress. Jokes. Get comfortable with checklists, both ad hoc and more permanent. Be ready to create and eliminate them as required. Make sure you have an easily accessed place to put a new list that's also attractive and even fun to engage with, in a loose-leaf notebook or in a software application that is readily available. Appropriately used, checklists can be a tremendous asset in enhancing personal productivity and relieving mental pressure. If, in fact, you have now captured everything that represents an open loop in your life and work, clarified and processed each one of those items in terms of what it means to you and what actions are required, and organized the results into an intact system that holds a current and complete overview, large and small, of all your present and someday projects, then you're ready for the next step of implementation in the art of stress-free productivity, the reflection process. Chapter 8. Reflecting, keeping it all fresh and functional. The purpose of this whole method of workflow management is not to let your brain become lax, but rather to enable it to be free to experience more elegant, productive, and creative activity. In order to earn that freedom, however, your brain must engage on some consistent basis with all your commitments and activities. You must be assured that you're doing what you need to be doing and that it's okay to be not doing what you're not doing. That facilitates the condition of being present, which is always the optimal state from which to operate. Reviewing your system on a regular basis, reflecting on the contents, and keeping it current and functional are prerequisites for that kind of clarity and stability. If you have a list of calls you must make, for example, the minute that list is not totally current with all the calls you need to make, your brain will not trust the system, and it won't get relief from its lower-level mental tasks. It will have to take back the job of remembering, processing, and reminding, which, as you should know by now, it doesn't do very effectively. All of this means your system cannot be static. In order to support appropriate action choices, it must be kept up to date. And it should trigger consistent and appropriate evaluation of your life and work at several horizons. There are two major issues that need to be handled at this point. First, what do you look at in all this and when? And second, what do you need to do and how often to ensure that all of it works as a consistent system, freeing you to think and manage at a higher level? A real review process will lead to enhanced and proactive new thinking in key areas of your life and work. Such thinking emerges from both focused concentration and serendipitous brainstorming, which will be triggered and galvanized by a consistent personal review of your inventory of actions and projects. What to look at when? Your personal system and behaviors need to be established in such a way that you can see all the action options you need to see when you need to see them. This is really just common sense, but few people actually have their processes and their organization honed to the point where they are as functional as they could be. When you have access to a phone and any discretionary time, you ought to at least glance at the list of all the phone calls you need to make, and then either direct yourself to the best one to handle, or give yourself permission to feel okay about not bothering with any of them. When you're about to go in for a discussion with your boss or your partner, take a moment to review the outstanding agendas you have with him or her, so you'll know that you're using your time most effectively. When you need to pick up something at the dry cleaner, first quickly review all the other errands that you might be able to do en route. People often ask me, "How much time do you spend looking at your system?" My answer is simply, as much time as I need to feel comfortable about what I'm doing. In actuality, it's an accumulation of 2 seconds here, 3 seconds there. What most people don't realize is that my lists are in one sense my office. Just as you might have post-its and stacks of documents that represent work to do at your workstation, so do I on my next actions list and calendar. Assuming that you've completely collected, processed, and organized your stuff, you'll most likely take only a few brief moments here and there to access your system for day-to-day reminders. Look at your calendar first. Your most frequent review will probably be your daily calendar and your daily tickler folder if you're maintaining one to see the hard landscape and assess what has to get done. You need to know the time and space parameters first. Knowing that you have nonstop meetings from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., for example, with barely a half-hour break for lunch, will help you make necessary decisions about any other activities. Then your action lists. After you review all your day and time-specific commitments and handle whatever you need to about them, your next most frequent area for review will be the lists of all the actions you could possibly do in your current context. If you're in your office, for instance, you'll look at your lists of calls, computer actions, and in-office things to do. This doesn't necessarily mean you will be doing anything on those lists. You'll just evaluate them against the flow of other work coming at you to ensure that you make the best choices about what to deal with. You need to feel confident that you're not missing anything critical. Frankly, if your calendar is trustworthy and your action lists are current, they may be the only things in the system you'll need to refer to more than every couple of days. There have been many days when I didn't need to look at any of my lists, in fact, because it was clear from the front end, my calendar, what I wouldn't be able to do. The right review in the right context. You may need to access any one of your lists at any time. When you and your life partner are decompressing at the end of the day, and you want to be sure you'll take care of the business the two of you manage together about home, family, and/or personal life, you'll want to look at your accumulated agendas for him or her. On the other hand, if your boss pops in for a face-to-face conversation about current realities and priorities, it will be highly functional for you to have your projects list up to date and your agenda list for him or her right at hand. When you suddenly get a text invitation for an unplanned but highly strategic lunch meeting with a potential client who just showed up, how fast can you clear the deck, print relevant data, and renegotiate other commitments to be fully present for that engagement, which, if it goes well, may extend into the afternoon? Updating your system. The real trick to ensuring the trustworthiness of the whole organization system lies in regularly refreshing your thinking and your system from a more elevated perspective. That's impossible to do, however, if your lists fall too far behind your reality. You won't be able to fool yourself about this. If your system is out of date, your brain will be forced to fully engage again at the lower level of remembering. This is perhaps the biggest challenge of all. Once you've tasted what it's like to have a clear head and feel in control of everything that's going on, can you do what you need to do to maintain that as an operational standard? The many years I've spent researching and implementing this methodology with countless people have proved to me that the magic key to the sustainability of the process is the weekly review. The power of the weekly review. If you're like me and most other people, no matter how good your intentions may be, you're going to have the world come at you faster than you can keep up. Many of us seem to have it in our natures to consistently entangle ourselves in more than we have the ability to handle. We book ourselves in back-to-back meetings all day, go to after-hours events that generate ideas and commitments we need to deal with, and get embroiled in engagements and projects that have the potential to spin our creative intelligence into cosmic orbits. That whirlwind of activity is precisely what makes the weekly review so valuable. It builds in some capturing, reevaluation, and reprocessing time to keep you in balance. There is simply no way to do this necessary regrouping while you're trying to get everyday work done. The weekly review will also sharpen your intuitive focus on your important projects as you deal with the flood of new input and potential distractions coming at you the rest of the week. You're going to have to learn to say no, faster and to more things, in order to stay afloat and comfortable. Having some dedicated time in which to at least get up to the project level of thinking goes a long way toward making that easier. What is the weekly review? Very simply, the weekly review is whatever you need to do to get your head empty again and get oriented for the next couple of weeks. It's going through the steps of workflow management, capturing, clarifying, organizing, and reviewing all your outstanding commitments, intentions, and inclinations, until you can honestly say, I absolutely know right now everything I'm not doing but could be doing if I decided to. From a practical standpoint, here is the three-part drill that can get you there. Get clear, get current, and get creative. Getting clear will ensure that all your collected stuff is processed. Getting current will ensure that all your orienting maps or lists are reviewed and up to date. The creative part happens to some degree automatically as you get clear and current. You will naturally be generating ideas and perspectives that will be adding value to your thinking about work and life. Get clear.